Have you ever wondered if there is a different, maybe even a better way to tackle an enrollment or marketing issue? Are there processes or practices in your institution that you wonder, why does this exist and why has no one bothered to disrupt it?
Or what about a hot new enrollment marketing trend that you've been asked to jump on, but you're not really sure how to do it the right way, or even if it's worth doing at all?
Believe me, we get it. I'm Jamie Gleason, a 20-year veteran of higher ed who has worked both inside and outside the institution and on the vendor side of enrollment marketing.
And I'm Tony Fraga, an 18-year recovering higher ed marketer who has seen just about every enrollment marketing model in the industry. And we've teamed up to launch the Pivot Podcast to take an issue, a hurdle, or an outdated process and suggest ways to pivot into a new direction or launch into a better process. As much as possible, we'll use actual examples, but we'll try to keep all the takeaways as fresh as possible.
You'll laugh, heck, you might even cry, but we promise this is a podcast that you won't want to miss. The Pivot is proud to be a part of the Enrollify Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to this podcast at enrollify.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of The Pivot. We took a little hiatus over the summer, but we're officially back. Tony, Jamie, how are we doing? How's the summer?
Flying by super fast.
And super hot, too. Oh, my word. I'm like so sick of sweating, but I guess it is summer, so sweat on.
Yeah, well, could be worse. We have a team member who's in Tempe, Arizona, and it's been averaging 116 degrees a day, which...
That's it? I guess she could take off the coat.
Yeah.
Anything that even gets remotely close to triple digits, I just kind of go into my shell, so...
Yeah, scary thoughts. Okay, so let's pick up where we left off. We, in episode 7, talked a lot about building a 12-month enrollment marketing game plan. And then in episode 8, we went into the audits a little bit and using that to help determine where you should lean into with, you know, your marketing budget and or just your own team's time and energy. And so one of the other kind of core things that you all said was super important in your 12-month game plan was content, whether that was new content or remarketing content. So I think focusing on new content for this episode will be super important and helping folks understand how they should be thinking about new content. So right before the episode, I was prompting you all of saying, you're going to have a lot of things. You can't promote all the things. How do you even make a decision? So little different spin on the pivot this time. We're going to start with, you have 9 programs. 3 are doing well. 3 are doing average. 3 are doing poor. You can only create 4 resources. Which do you pick? Each of you get 1 clarifying question to ask me. And then you have to make decisions based on that.
I already know my clarifying question. I'm going to start. That's a good one. And actually, I'll give you credit, Shane. I literally feel like I came out of a few meetings just recently, literally in very similar situations with some schools and some enrollment managers and marketing folks. My question is, when you say poor, can you clarify a little bit more? Like the 3 that are poor, are they poor in numbers, like apps are down in enrollment numbers, or are they poor, which could also be in numbers, are they poor marketable? For instance, like teaching and nursing programs right now are suffering a massive market drop. This is no secret. This is a trend since the pandemic. It's really, really hard for nursing schools and schools of education to attract people into those degree programs because those professions are now, you know, so like, are we talking about facing market, massive market factors or not? I think that has a bearing.
Knew that was going to be your question. So yes, market factors for the most part. Obviously, those market factors then impact enrollment to a degree, but it's not like you have a great program that's just you're terrible at marketing. That is not the situation. It is, yeah, mostly market factors, which do play an impact on enrollment, obviously, but none of the programs are dying, you know, having 2 people apply, things like that.
Got it. So 3 programs that work, that are doing well, three programs that are okay, not great, and three programs that are really struggling.
Yep.
Nine total programs. We can make how many pieces? Four?
Four. Jamie also gets a clarifying question.
Yeah. I feel like I have so many questions, you know, and they run the gamut. And I'm just gonna kind of verbally, like, you know, say them, even though I'm not actually asking the question, but like, who controls the website? And what type of resources, like what campaigns have you run in the past, and how much budget is there? This is so hard to commit, and especially on the spot. Like if I had like 15 minutes to think about this, maybe it'd be better, but like on the spot, it's very tough. So let's go with, are the programs that we're seeing not do well? Oh, actually, let's go all nine programs. Are the ones that are doing poorly, historically doing poorly, are the ones that are doing medium, like historically kind of, are they all trending in the same direction? Or is this something that's like a market shift in the last, say, 12 months?
Yeah, the latter. I think it's something that kind of coming out of COVID, starting to see some dips in these programs and or, you know, increase in awareness or interest in the programs that are doing well.
There's a couple ways I would tackle this. And I think a curveball pivot here is, and historically, I'll just say, in a lot of the conversations I've been having with higher ed professionals, the immediate desire is like, well, some of these programs that are struggling, they're struggling from these market factors. There's really nothing we can do about it. Let's avoid those and go with our winners. And I would actually argue right now from the top, from the leadership, there's a lot of pressure on enrollment managers, marketing communication professionals in higher ed to squeeze the most, market the best programs. And often I lean that way too. That's some of my questions with schools is like, okay, what? Don't just give me the three programs to market for you that are like really difficult to sell right now. It's going to be an upward battle and you don't have the budget to fund it. So I normally go that way. However, I would pick a little differently this time. I'd pick one from each. I pick one from each. That's three out of my four. And the fourth one, I wouldn't pick from any of the nine programs. I would pick a brand general piece that is more brand powerful and has a universality in appeal and value to anyone interested in any of the programs. And that is why I'd spend one of those of the four. And then I'd pick one that's from the strong, one that's from the media, you know, doing okay, and one that's from the poor programs. I might, of the poor ones, pick the one I think is most marketable of those. But still, I wouldn't be afraid to pick the ones from the bottom because this is a content question. And I believe content is the answer to outdoing the negative market rhetoric. For example, we know that becoming a teacher isn't cool right now. A school that puts out really good content that counters the trend or the kind of stereotype right now, I actually think that kind of content is edgy and provocative and helps the school get noticed. You have to actually do thought leadership, but what if you challenge the status quo? And sometimes that's the stuff that gets most attractive. So anyways, I think content can win. Again, it's work, but that's what I do. Three program specific, one general universal piece. And that's how I'd pick my four.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things, the other questions that I prepared for thinking you may ask was around the competitiveness of the programs and thinking, you know, we have one that it's a very competitive space to be in. We're not going to create content there because then the promotion of that program becomes incredibly challenging where you're like kind of sinking money just to stay afloat potentially. And that becomes, you know, this big challenge. And so I think, yeah, picking the ones that are most marketable and being strategic about those and also kind of, again, sharing the work across programs so that you can kind of move a couple of balls forward and have some level of, you know, benchmark of, okay, our good program, if we were to do this again, we could roughly expect this and you can try it out once rather than let's dump all our money into the three low performing ones and try and make them average or better. And then none of the three were, and it's just like, you're going to feel so defeated. You're never going to make content for the average or good because you're going to feel like content doesn't work and it's going to rub you the wrong way. Jamie, what about you? How would you approach
thinking and through these? I agree. These conversations are happening very often. And I think that I also, like Tony, have had lots of conversations where people are kind of like leaning in toward the winners. I go back and forth on this because I think partly because I'm just a guy who likes to challenge things. So I feel like whenever people just want to like lean into that, which is working, I feel like it's a little bit of a, well, historically, I probably felt like it's a little bit of a cop out. But in the higher ed space, philosophically, I do feel like there's this space where schools shouldn't be offering everything. They should actually be nuancing themselves and figuring out what their niche is and kind of like grabbing onto that Jim Collins kind of hedgehog concept. It's just so hard to figure this. There's too little information for me to make this decision. I just want to say that. I'm just like going to own that one. But I think if I had to pick, I would probably try to look at which ones have lost the most market share in the last like 24 months and then figure out if there's any marketability to that. And then go, I would put that one on, put one or two of those on the list. I love Tony's idea of doing a general one. And I might even lean into that to a little different angle in that it wouldn't be general just about the institution or the UVPs of the institution or grad programs at said institution, but more like making a case for graduate education or in the case of undergrad, making a case for education. One other spin I might put on it is, and it literally just had some come in last night for a client that asked me this, would be like, what could we do? This is more than a content campaign, but like, are there ways to like deconstruct our program to then repackage it, do a content campaign toward repackaging it different, and then putting that into the mix as well? So maybe for one of those programs, it's kind of like staying steady. What's it look like to like break that into more of a certificate style program or some sort of blockchain program that then you can put a content campaign together? And potentially that could change the trajectory of how you think about education. Might you win you some professional points of like, hey, here's a person who's thinking about education differently, thinking about how we package it differently, thinking about how we're putting it together. And then if I'm really kind of changing gears and thinking about the undergrad side, there might be just a place for just doing one campaign just on experience. You know, like I think sometimes we just, I said this to my wife not too long ago about a school that will remain unnamed. And I said, there's just too much selling of education that goes on there and not enough thinking about what we as consumers think about. And that's the experience that we get when we buy. What's the experience that you get when you buy and the experience that you enjoy when you buy something? And how do we talk about that? It's not just, I mean, like we've got to get over in higher ed, this like, this is about a piece of paper, right? It's not. It's about showing yourself as a person who's driven. It's about getting yourself a credential that will move you in a certain space. It's about like building a network. It's about living on campus and being a part of a big community. Let's start talking about experience and build a content campaign that's about experience, whether it's grad or undergrad. Like those experiences matter. And they have different levels of like how much they matter and how they matter. But I think that's a big part of this. Personally, I think it's a big part of where we might be missing, you know, those content pieces in a lot of communication flows. We love to talk about like ratios and spaces and things like that, but we don't do as good a job talking about like the emotive experience that students really have when they're at a campus or wherever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. So you both alluded to or straight up said there's not enough data to make a decision. So let's play. We're going to put another spin on the game. If you could pick three data points that would help you make this decision, what three data points would you pick and why?
Year over year application numbers for 3 years.
That's one.
That's one.
Okay. Approved.
I would do dollars. I want to know how much budget we have to aggressively market the four content resources we're going to make. That doesn't mean, yeah, I just want to know what budget is available to promote and market the content throughout the year.
It actually, to add to that point, I think it would be awesome, really, if you could have know what you have and know what, you know, like where it's been spent. So like, what has that been allocated to our previous toward previously, in order to really understand, like, has it worked, or where has it, you know, that where have they been kind of wasting money or spending money that hasn't really returned?
Jamie, clarification in your year over year enrollment numbers, does that mean?
I only just said application, because I'm really, I just want to know, like, what's the demand? Like, how are we creating demand? And
yeah, like, see, I want to know the full thing, Shane. So like, I would say, can we get the full funnel?
Your funnel report.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Like leads, inquiries, app started, app completed, accepted, deposited, showed up.
That's several hundred data points. I think
you guys know what a data point is.
That's why I said,
but you can fit it all in one slide. Okay, you can fit it all in one slide.
That's fair. We can, maybe we'll boil it down to like a one pager report. You get 3 1 pager reports in different areas. So you would get an enrollment one pager report that shows year over year data of your funnel for these programs. Then you would kind of get like a budget report of what's been spent for the last couple of years and what can we spend moving forward. And then what's your other data points are out the window. What's your other one pager report that you feel like this would really help us make an informed decision where we feel like we're moving forward with, you know, our best foot forward as far as plan of action and budget and pound per pound going to be able to then also prove to leadership this worked. Let us do it again 4 more times next year and give us more budget to dump into this.
I know what I would want as the last one, but I don't think it's possible to get because I have yet to have any school ever give this to me ever in 18 years.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Guess.
Go ahead.
No, guess.
An overview of the Comflow on one page.
Oh, that's good. That wasn't going to be it. I've gotten that a few times, but very rarely. That actually would be really, that actually might be more valuable than what I was going to say. That is more valuable. I'd take Jamie's. But I'll tell you what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I would want to know, the metric I'd want, the data point is what their organic rankings are for each of the programs right now. Like, and currently, what do they rank for related to those programs? Either they could give me pages or they give me number of keywords or positions. I'll take anything SEO that is the current. I'd want to know where they stand right now, because, and I'll tell you why, and I know I care a lot about SEO and we've preached that several times in the pivot, but it's actually not just about SEO. Knowing that one metric lets you know, it's related to the other things we wanted to know. It tells you how much we are going to have to spend to do paid promo or how much we don't have to spend because there is something. It tells us how hard we're going to have to work to rank, whether there's any existing traction to piggyback off of and just move it up a few spaces versus there's no traction and we're going to really have to do a lot more rankings. It might even tell us whether or not we have to get involved with the website folks, whether we can ignore that and just make a landing page that ranks on its own or some blog posts. I just think that has such a bearing on the overall marketing strategy. And that's why I'd want that metric.
I might actually take yours. You took mine, I might take yours. I think yours might be more important, so.
Alrighty, we're gonna play a game, guys, okay? So, first and foremost, get a pen, get a paper, pull out your notes app on your phone, whatever it might be, okay? Got it? Great. All right, what keywords does your website currently rank for? Take a couple seconds, right? 1, 2, 3, 4. I give you a few, not just a couple. What doesn't it rank for that you think it should rank for? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, what are a few keyword opportunities that you could be winning on if you just simply tweaked some of your existing website copy? Got it? Okay, how'd you do? Ooh, not so hot. Not sure what you're currently ranking for, or not sure what you could be ranking for. Well, that's okay, because our friends at DD Agency want to help you answer all of these questions. DD Agency is a higher ed specific marketing technology agency that has conducted countless SEO audits for colleges and universities across the country. In these audits, they detail where you currently rank, what you could be ranking for, exactly how copy should be tweaked on website pages, and so much more. If this sounds like something that you could benefit from, give the guys at DD Agency a ping and be sure to mention that Enrollify sent you to claim a 10% discount on any of their SEO offerings. So head on over to enrollify.org/DDA SEO, that's DDA as in DD Agency, SEO, or simply follow the link in the show notes below. That will guarantee you get a 10% discount off of your audit. All right, head on over to enrollify.org/DDA SEO, or simply Google DD Agency, find DD Agency's website, and be sure to mention that you heard about them through Enrollify when you request your audit. All right, folks, back to the show.
I think if you do an SEO report like that as well, using any of the popular tools, you're also going to get some insight into the paid search component and the cost per click, which I think is going to give you a better indication of the money that you're planning, that you have. Is that actually going to be enough, right? If you're marketing an MBA with no specialization, that's going to require a bit more money than, you know, marketing a very niche degree. While demand may not be high quantity-wise, the quality of the people searching these certain terms is super high, and you know that you can attract them for a little bit cheaper than that other program and still be getting, you know, pound per pound much better results. One of the other things I was thinking too is doing that SEO research and having that one pager, the monthly search volume of the keywords will also give you a sense of demand. Like you were saying, Jamie, about the demand for your school's program, but the demand for at the programmatic level across the country, is there demand for this type of program? Gives you a little bit of insight into that. If you're looking up, you know, around your very niche leadership program or nonprofit management, and they're very specific, you might even realize like, we're not going to pick that one because nobody is looking this up. And so we could create the content, but it's not going to increase the overall number of eyeballs that we want pound per pound better than some of these other programs would. And so while it might be easier to make compelling content for that program, the overall impact is actually smaller than other programs that might just be able to be exposed more to new eyeballs than what you're kind of currently making. So thinking about those kind of three reports, and let's say they get packaged up, how do you think that might influence what you pick? Meaning, if the data, what would the data have to say for you to change your mind on what you originally selected as far as your four resources?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, and part of the reason I thought about the email comm flow was like, if there are like traction gaps where, you, hey, leads are great, but to completed applications, there's massive decline, like then it automatically goes, you know, the fixer in me says, okay, something's broken in how we're communicating at that section of the funnel and how do we fix that? I forget what your question was now.
More of like what the data points or just holistic reports that you would read them and be like, oh, you know what? You know, in Tony's example, I'm going to do one of each and a brand one. What kind of data would make you say, actually, I'd do this instead?
Or to take this a little further for the audience to explain it. In my example, if I'm picking three program specific ones and a general one, how would I pick one of the three for the top, one of the three for the middle? What data points you want to know? What data points would sway the strategy, right? So I think you already said a good one. And you went over something fairly fast that I actually want to go slow on and reiterate for the audience, because this is kind of a secret play that I think is often misunderstood. I've been in meetings and I've been presenting on this, and this is one that I can tell people, they just aren't familiar with this. We're talking about SEO. We were talking about the data on an SEO report, and you said you would get cost per click. You would get paid info. And this is what confuses people. An SEO, search engine optimization, this is organic search, this is about unpaid, and yet we're talking about a paid metric, cost per click. What place does a paid metric have to do when we're talking about organic and unpaid rankings? And this confuses people, but is probably, I think, one of the arguably the most important metrics. And I'm answering your question here. I would pick programs that have high monthly search volume on keywords that are also ones that cost a lot to market. Because that tells me not only is there interest in the population, like prospects are looking for programs with these words, but it also tells me there are a lot of competitors potentially buying those keywords. And I would bank on the fact that those competitors probably have pretty bad ads. Like that just go to like apply now or learn more. There's the run of the mill higher ed ads you see for programs that everybody has. And I would bank on the content being more attractive. And I'm just going to assume we don't have a big budget. So I can't just win by throwing dollars at Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and paying $100,000 to get my thing out there. So I've got to win on the organic. If I can win on high volume and high cost keywords, that if you wanted to win, get that traffic paid, you'd have to spend $15, $20, $35 cost per click, which is really expensive. That data would help me pick the program. As I pick programs, there's some level of traction the school has, and there's enough volume where I know there's enough market demand where putting out this content piece would actually generate views and clicks and leads that we then would nurture throughout. That's why I think that would be so valuable.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you feel like from a, you mentioned kind of the more macro brand or school specific resource, going off of, you know, what Jamie said and tying in the experience and a lot of these other things, that the intangibles of, you know, higher education, does that data have a place for that resource? Is that really meant for inquiries that are already in your funnel that have seen about a program or about a school or whatever they're interested in? And this is more of a, once they've kind of gotten to a certain point, then they're ready for that. Or can you use that as a lead gen tool that will it actually have value? How could, right? Because you're just talking about your university, the SEO play is much harder. It would have to be somebody searching your school. So how do you use that resource?
That one's easy. I think that answer is it depends, and it depends on the other metrics. So you said, how do we use the data and how would that inform us? Earlier, we said we wanted, Jamie and I agree, we wanted the inquiry app and enrolled data. Even if we just got those three, by having that data, we would see where they're weak, where the school is weak, and where we are weak. And I would make the decision on that general piece to fill the weak area. So it could be top if, wow, you don't really have a lot of leads for this program. You just need more names. And once you get them engaging with you, you guys are pretty good and efficient, but it's weak at the top, or we're getting a ton of leads, but they're not starting apps. We need a mid-funnel piece. Or they're starting apps, they're not completing, or they're completing and then there's really low deposits or really a lot high melt. We need a bottom funnel value piece that reinforces value. So I would make the decision for the general piece based on where the weakest part of the funnel was, based on that data we asked for earlier.
Gotcha. Makes total sense. Jamie, would any of your answers change based on any of the data that could be available? Obviously, you know, if you pick one and the enrollment gap is just massive, avoiding any circumstance like that, like what kind of data would change your mind? Or is there, maybe let's pick on a different one other than SEO or even enrollment from a budget standpoint. Let's say the budgets were not all, it's not all, here's 50 grand for each program. It's here's 70 for this one and 30 for this one and 50 for this one. And what would kind of make you hesitant on the budgetary side to pursue a certain program?
Yeah, the budget document alone would be hard. I would want to couple the budget and the enrollment document to understand, say, for instance, we have 70,000 going toward a particular program and it's trending like the opposite direction at the steepest rate. And it's like, okay, something we're doing there is not working. That one might be worth just abandoning and saying, hey, let's put our dollars towards something that's a little bit more, you know, mid-level, something that could be worked on. I think that the budget, I think, has to be almost coupled with that enrollment and that enrollment information. Otherwise, it's just kind of like, okay, we did that, but we don't know where, you know, what it led to.
Think about going off of that point a tiny bit, like if you had, as soon as that, like a leads problem for a program, but that program had a small budget, and then you had a inquiry to app problem for another program, and that one had a massive budget. Well, you want to flip-flop those. You want the smaller budget for, you know, a retargeting campaign and an audience that you can then kind of, you're really going after getting these people that are already this far a little bit further is way cheaper than we need to generate a ton of names for this program and we'll do well once they're in there. But that requires a much larger budget. And so it's also, where's the gap in that enrollment data? And then what type of money does it take to fill that gap? And the higher up in the funnel it is, likely the more expensive it's going to be.
Now, we haven't talked about, and we're probably running out of time, but I don't know if this is where you wanted to go, but we haven't really talked about what kind of content we're talking about. What is a content campaign? What we put into it? Because I think that has a lot of bearing on some of this too, is we're talking about one asset, one thing, Or are you talking about a full campaign where there's multiple things, multiple touch points, multiple pathways? And yeah, so just curious how much we want to get into.
I think that's a great question. So as a recovering outbound marketer, I think this idea of campaigns and kind of coupling the campaign methodology or mentality with topic clusters, which is what we, you know, kind of where we live a lot. I actually think that'd be a great topic for another show where we could kind of get into that. I know, you know, shameless plug, and it probably will be too late by the time this actually airs, but like when we talk about deconstructing an inbound campaign or an inbound retainer, I think putting that idea of what is a campaign and why is it like, you know, why do we put some digital dollars towards something to then draw, you know, to have these rippling effects later on? I think sometimes we don't think about that. I think as, you know, higher ed, we think we need more leads. Let's put some money in a budget. Let's send more emails and let's keep that going. And as long as we can, which is not altogether wrong, but I also think that we miss a lot in that kind of mentality. We miss a lot of the nuance of what are the pathways we're offering? What are the offers that are in the, you know, CTAs and all that kind of stuff?
We don't, but I would summarize, Jamie, you've just highlighted so well. That's the difference between inbound enrollment marketing versus outbound enrollment marketing. Inbound versus outbound. Inbound is like bunches of campaigns put together in a more strategic and sophisticated way. Outbound doesn't have to care about that. Outbound just turns things on for as long as you can turn it on and says, hey, what are we getting? It's different. And I think that's worth unpacking because I do think there's still, even like 10 years later, there's still a lot of confusion and a lack of understanding on what really is inbound enrollment marketing. What does it mean for a school to market itself and promote its programs and recruit prospective students via an inbound methodology, an inbound strategy? We're talking about a small component of that, which is these new content campaigns that you started with this pivot, which is great. But I think we do need to give some time to like how you bring that together, because I think that is the difference here.
Yeah. And I think that's the goal of the content piece is the goal of the episode is it's one core resource. You can surround that with tons of things, right? You're going to obviously do email promotions. You're obviously going to promote on digital ads. You may want to create supporting blog content since you basically have this SEO report, right? Or audit that maybe you did from the last episode. And there's so much that you can do. You can't cram all that into one resource. And I think going back to your points too of the enrollment gaps, but depending on the enrollment gap might depend on what that core resource might be. It might not be your downloadable ebook. It might be more of like, you know, a student testimonial video because it's that last mile that you're trying to get people through. And I think that's one of those things we could spend hours, not even an episode. We could spend hours talking about the potential opportunities for types of content pieces that, you know, could fill the various gaps. And there are, I think there's a case for each content type could be a good play for anything. It really depends on how you position it. But thinking about, let's say the most common challenges, let's say one is generating leads. And then the other one is getting applicants to submit and or deposit. What are your rough gut instinct on what type of resource? Again, style, got ebook, it. Pillar page.
I got mine.
Video, text campaign.
Yep.
What's your thing?
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of this right now. It's very, very popular with our clients and with our team. And I actually think there's a reason why it's so popular, but it's really this like, I like to call it an inventory. I think it's aptly known around the DD hallways as a quiz, but I feel like it's more of like an inventory to talk about, hey, who are you? Like, what drives you? What motivates you? What makes you tick? What excites you? And like really putting these resources that are there. What I love about them is that first of all, it's a great lead generation tool because people are submitting their information, but they're looking for something in return, right? It's like they're, and it's also, I think, brilliant because people love talking about themselves. So anytime that you can have people talk about themselves, but then also get some insight of like, oh man, like that program looks like so cool. And it kind of drives you toward this program or that. I think that's a total win right now. So that's my preferred piece of content du jour.
I'm going to piggyback on that. It kind of falls in a similar category, but it's an unsung hero. It's a secret weapon that is not leveraged enough. And it's not really new. It's just not done enough today. It's surveys. And this would be for a lead gen at the top of the funnel. I think there's a huge value in doing short, simple surveys, even if that's not a prospect lead tool. What it does for the institution is it helps you establish more thought leadership. You get to make a survey on a program-specific related topic. You're going to get people in there who are not qualified. I get it. But what you get is data on what the needs and what the questions and what the desires are. Then out of that survey, you then now have very clearly the content piece you should make. A, you can publish the results of the survey. That becomes a premium content resource, which could attract more prospects. You can then listen to the answers and make a piece tailored towards the areas of biggest need as people answered the survey for the industry. Like, for instance, I'm thinking of a nursing school that did a nursing survey of nurses in the industry at hospitals and not at hospitals. And the data they got of that then led towards this school being able to publish a premium content piece that was based on the data they got from the survey. So they're learning about their prospective student audience, and even from not prospective students, from industry practitioners, from doctors, from people in the medical community. So the survey itself is a piece, its results are a piece, and then it gives you the creative ideas to make your next piece. It's triple in value. You just have to have the patience to do it and put it out there. And that's the con, is it takes time to do all this and you need like 6 months. But I think surveys are underutilized and are really, really good tools for schools to get leads at the top of the funnel.
Yeah, it's such so great for like just understanding your market, right? And I think, you know, we hit on early on, post-pandemic, markets have changed, right? Especially particular markets. Survey is an unbelievable way to kind of put your finger on the pulse of like, what exactly happened there? And why is this trending downward or flat? Or like, why can't we get more energy in this one? Because you're right, people are going to answer that for you, and it's going to be so helpful.
And that's one of those things that you're saying, it takes 6 months. But if you pick one of your average or, you know, higher performing programs, the need isn't there right this second, so that you can start to build that up over time. You're not going to suffer necessarily because you're still doing all the same old things you're doing. And this one additional piece, gathering some insight, and then ideally using that to continue to propel it forward without experiencing a dip. Whereas the other program that may already be declining when you do that, and then you're waiting 6 months to really develop more of that additional content, could be seen as like, well, that's not enough at the moment. And so how do you kind of strategically, you know, place those different types of tactics depending on the performance of the program as a whole, which seems to be a common theme. Awesome. This was super insightful, especially given the limited data that you can work with, but that is some people's reality. They don't have the luxury of every data point to make every decision. Thinking about what you all are working on, we're heading into the middle-ish of August. What's on your hearts, minds, or to-do lists?
Lately, it's just been awesome. This is one of my favorite times of year. The kind of, for most schools, it's the beginning of the new recruitment cycle. And where I've been spending a lot of time is in strategic planning. This is one of my favorite things to do. And it's looking at the fall. It's looking at the entire year over generally about 10 or 12 months and thinking about where we want to place certain things, budget allocations, when we're going to spend more aggressively on this kind of campaign, which should generate folks here. So then those folks get nurtured here to hit this app deadline. I love the Gantt chart, planning things out based on certain deadlines, start terms. And we're just spending tons of time strategic planning, outlining, developing a content strategy, an ad strategy, an SEO strategy, and essentially ultimately an app and enrolled student development strategy for an entire school. I've been spending lots of my days doing that, and I have plenty more coming. But that's my favorite thing to do right now, because for me, I go back and I can sleep at night and I'm like, we've got a plan. And I know it will change, we'll need to pivot, but the overarching plan isn't because everything's going to go exactly as we planned. It's because when it doesn't go as planned, it's November and something's off, we know what to measure against in order to get back to center. And so we end up being really grateful we made the plan, not because it's going to go perfect, but because we know it won't go perfect and we have that to measure against.
Yeah. Yeah, I think probably the thing that's most on my mind is actually what leads up to that strategic planning. And that's like really the assessment. Like, I'm notorious as being a fixer. And I feel like this time of the year, you get to look at everything that's kind of broken or the things that you think are broken. and then make a plan toward what's, where do we go from here? So whether that's who didn't show up to events or what events did we have that were totally like fails or which ones were total winners, where do we like, where do we allocate? Where do we like have to, and the actual, this pivot was kind of good that way because it kind of fits into exactly where we are thinking of like, hey, the ROI here is not where we want it to be. We've got to mitigate for next year. We've got to overcome, like, you know, we've got really bad or not as good as we want, like app start rates, but we have lots of leads. What's missing? Like, let's assess what's missing, put our resources where they're going to make the biggest difference in the next year to then get to that plan. So that's, you can kind of tell where our, where the company is at right now.
Love it. It's almost like somebody planned this episode or something. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty. Well, thank you all for listening to episode 9 of The Pivot, talking all things new content creation. Next episode, we will be talking about remarketing campaigns. So if that is of interest to you, I'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Hey, y'all, Zach here from Enrollify. If you like this podcast, chances are you'll like other Enrollify shows too. Our podcast network is growing by the month, and we've got a plethora of marketing, admissions, and higher ed technology shows that are jam-packed with stories, ideas, and frameworks that are all designed to empower you to become a better higher ed professional. Our shows feature a selection of the industry's best as your hosts. Learn from Mickey Baines, Jeremy Tears, Jamie Hunt, Corinne Myers, Jamie Gleason, and many, many more. You can learn more about the Enrollify Podcast Network at podcasts.enrollify.org. Our shows help higher ed marketers and admissions professionals find their next big idea. Find yours at podcasts.enrollify.org.